Welcome to Is That Us podcast, the podcast where we talk about Latina representation in film and television. In today's episode, we're going to talk about the bad Latina. This is the stereotype that we are going to dive into, specifically around relationship building and how Latinas are perceived. Today, my two amigas are joining me, Mayra Chavez and Kareli Ordaz. Which by now there are three other episodes before this one. So if you heard all of them, you know they are incredibly smart, brilliant people that have a lot of really good stuff to contribute to this conversation. So join us as we explore the ways in which this stereotype can limit the representation and understanding of Latinas. And let's discuss the importance of breaking down these stereotypes to promote a more authentic and diverse representation of us. So sit back, relax, and let's get started. Mayra, Kareli, what characters come to mind when you think of this archetype? Or what comes to mind in general?
Well, I think of the chola, the homegirl, you know, in the hood who is surviving, who is robbing people, you know, doing criminal activities or engaging in criminal activities. And who's angry at the world. Mm-hmm. And I think it really comes being angry at, you know, her parents, her conditions, but also herself. Mm-hmm. Whenever I think of the chola, I don't see self-love or self-awareness. Like, it's her against the world and sometimes her against herself, depending on types of things that she does.
It's survival.
Yeah.
What about you, Mayra?
I mean, definitely the chola. I also think of someone who probably has a woman that doesn't have the education, doesn't have that the opportunities to have a career and education. So therefore, again, they're doing something that's deemed or looked down upon.
Yeah.
Someone that's like causing ruckus or, you know, bringing negativity into, like, whether that's their households or like their neighborhood or like just their community in itself.
And someone who's misunderstood. I think yes. That's where the anger comes from, because she is not able to thrive because people don't understand her, whether that's at home or, you know, at school or in the streets. So she's always fighting.
Yeah. I think for me what comes up in terms of, you know, bad Latinas in film and television is the person entering the country without the proper paperwork, right? Mm-hmm. The trying to get by while living in the shadows of the system. And I feel like what all of these have in common that we're talking about is the lack of opportunity, the lack of choices. Mm-hmm. And I think when it comes to seeing these characters portrayed either on a TV series, a show, a movie, is that you don't always get at the roots of how they ended in that position, like why they made the choices that they made. Because it's always portrayed in a very, at the very individual level, and never talked about, well, were there good schools in the neighborhood,
right,
where that Latina was a part of? Like, was there an after school program that she could have attended instead of, you know, being out in the streets and making bad choices? Or like, just what were the conditions, you know, like were her parents, like maybe out of like their frustration, they were never around. So really there was nobody to give advice or like teach you better. So I feel like when I think of this type of character, the bad Latina, I agree with you. Like, it's someone that is misunderstood, someone that hasn't had a lot of options or choices, and really someone that no one wants to give a break. Mm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. That's like right away gets put in this, well, that's just you. Like, you're always gonna like mess it up. And like, the lack of ethics and values and boundaries. But when you're coming from a place of survival mode, like, what does that do to your psyche? Mm-hmm. And, like, trying to understand, like, what is right and wrong? Like, I feel like it totally gets skewed when people are telling you, like, well, stealing is wrong. Well, if I don't steal, I'm not going to have money for my siblings to have food or to have a place to live. Mm. And, like you really blur the lines.
Well, I find that tough. I mean, I think that we shouldn't give people a pass for robbing, right?
So, yeah, there is limits.
Right. Definitely. Like, yeah. And you know, again, without taking into consideration the conditions that force someone to do that, you know, criminal activity, I think it's important to hold the line in terms of acknowledging what's going on around you and providing more color to your actions. But also, I don't know, like, holding folks accountable, like, you shouldn't do that behavior. So for me, and I think that this really comes from, like, how I grew up and, like, what was ingrained in me about being a good person, a good Latina. But I'm also like, yes, and we also have a choice, you know, like, mm-hmm. at what point is a choice versus, you know, conditions and nature? And I don't know.
It's a fine line.
It's a fine line.
Yeah. It's a very fine line. And also holding people accountable.
Right.
I mean, I have two things. One of them is like, I think we do need to take, it is important for us to take the conditions and like what's going on in the context of this, because if we only focus on the person doing a crime or whether it's creating a breaking or a vandalism, then we fall into the same category of like criminalizing people of color more than we do already. And we continue that kind of like that stereotype and that story that they continue to get criminalized without really acknowledging that, you know, there's a reason why Beverly Hills doesn't really have so much crime, right? Because people don't need to rob and steal. As opposed to Oakland, as opposed to like cities where there's more people of color, there is a reason. And it's because there's lack of housing, lack of like actual opportunities and actual mobility to be able to have people move up, right? And then we talk about like not having, you know, like the different type of jobs that we have, it's still minimum wage and all of that. So people don't have the opportunity. And we live in a capitalism society where we're told that we need the latest things. We're told we need brand new stuff. We're told we're, exactly. So it's like, so then it's like that, all these things play into like why people make decisions that they make, right? And then let's not forget about like just also like generations and like, you know, sometimes you continue to cycle, right? If you grew up in poverty, it's really hard for people to actually get out of poverty, right? Mm-hmm. Let's not forget like the privileges that people also have when they inherit money, right? We don't have that luxury. A lot of folks don't have that luxury, especially in inner cities, to be able to say, I can get out of the hood, right? Mm-hmm. And even that, there's the whole thing. It's like, why would you want to get out of the place that you grew up in? Like, why not make that place better instead of removing yourself from that place and then having someone that doesn't live here come replace you, you know, basically move out other people, and then it's no longer your neighborhood, right? It's no longer what you grew up in. So there's that. I also think that I'm having such a hard time like thinking about like who is the bad Latina or who is, because in my perspective, that is also an old thing. Like I'm trying to think of like actors or like even like TV, thinking about like, I don't see that. I don't necessarily see that. Maybe that was back in the day, like 80s before our time, but I just don't necessarily see that now, maybe early even 90s. With like movies like La Familia and all of that, American Me, that kind of thing, right? Like Chola, like all those things. But I don't necessarily see that now. So for me, it's more of like, oh, we are moving into a world of like, this is not necessarily just the one stereotype or the one of the four different types of stereotypes that they have Latinas, but actually it's multidimensional, and there's more to it, right? At least that's what I think. I think of like Bad Latina, I'm like, oh, I'm like having such a hard time trying to really picture who is a Bad Latina as opposed to like maybe 80s and 90s and then comparing to now, yeah, what that looks
and
like.
And you know, I have a theory for that, because if, you know, film and television, they're a reflection of what's happening in society, right? Like I really do believe the media is the mirror of our lives, and when you look at this type of character, I will say is newer in the age of, you know, film and television, that like the good Latina, the sexy Latina, the maid. But you see it very prevalent in like the 80s, the 90s. And, you know, that's when there was a very big Latino immigrant wave coming to the United States. And I feel that it's directly connected to that idea of the other, that you don't belong, that you are here to take this away from us. And I feel like that's, like, if you look at the films of those decades, it's very present.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm happy to hear that, like, you don't see it as much, and I agree with you. I feel like for me, when I think of, like, oh, the bad Latina, the one character that comes up is Letty from Fast and Furious, which, I mean, with relationship dynamics, I have questions, and I find some stuff a bit problematic. But that's like the only kind of big thing that comes out.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. And I personally, I don't see her as a bad Latina. That's the other thing. Like, mm-hmm. I don't necessarily see her as being a bad Latina. I think she mm-hmm. was in the position that she had, and she had to make decisions, and that's what happened. And I think a lot of folks, sometimes you're in positions of things, and you just make those decisions because that's really what you have. And yes, some of us have choice, but sometimes that's the only choice you have. Like, you can only do certain things. And so that's what you do, right? Because that's all you know. That's all you've learned. Mm-hmm. And then I will say that I think in, like, national media and, like, in national, Latinas, Latinos don't have a good image, right? We hear from, like,
in the news. The news,
yeah, the
really
news.
Don't do us
exactly.
any service.
No, you hear Trump. You hear Fox News. You hear this very conservative news outlets that just, you know, continue to criminalize us and continue mm-hmm. to say we're here again, like you say, we're here to take out, you know, people's jobs, we're here to do this, all of that, and also that we're not educated, that we don't have the skills, that we're here just to, like, really be a nuisance to society mm-hmm. without taking it into account something that Kareli mentioned, was like our people, like, we have indigenous blood, not all of us obviously. But the ones that we do, like, we are from this side of the world.
This continent, yeah.
You know, we're from this side of the world. You know, it's like, we've been here, you know, that kind of thing. Like, we've been here. We were colonized, but we've been here. And the other thing is, like, also, our people did not come in the 80s. You know, we have people who...
Many,
like,
folks, the border crossed well, them. They didn't cross
and that,
the border.
And yeah. more than that, like... My grandpa was part of the Bracero movement back in the 60s. You know, my
so
grandpa
was
told and was made to come to the United States, you know, because they weren't enough people to grow crops and, like, do the agriculture back in Salinas and Fresno, all of those places. And then they were deported once the men came from, like, whatever war we were in. And so, like, it's like we've been here, you know, like these, you know, we've been here for many generations. We have people who are fourth, fifth generation.
Yeah.
You know, all you have to do is go to LA. We do live in Northern California, so our experiences are different.
Yeah.
But it's just like we also have been here, even before or even after this became the United States.
Yeah, I think a note on that idea of, you know, always painting the Latino communities as newcomers. And, you know, I feel like for me, I am a newcomer, so it's a little tricky for me to speak on this. But despite that, is just because you're new doesn't mean that you're not contributing. And the narrative of us taking versus, hey, we are subsidizing the American economy with our cheap labor. That is something that I just don't hear often enough, where it's like the day we're ready to pay $20 for a strawberry, then
yeah,
you should talk about it's okay not to have
a
whole community working.
You mentioned something just now that even I have, like, a trouble of, like, understanding, because this whole concept of contributing. Like, you only have value if you contribute to society. Mm-hmm. And I'm sorry, but how many American citizens do we have in the U.S. that don't necessarily contribute to what we think is mm-hmm. contributing? And yet, it's not like people are being, like, told, oh, go back to wherever you're from or blah, blah, blah. And this includes people who are white. You know, it's just like,
you get to be mediocre.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And it's like, but only you can only have value if you're an immigrant or have family who are immigrants. If you are contributing to society, and that's also not okay.
Yeah,
it's not, like, it's not okay to say that you only have value as a person or as someone who in the society, to be able to say it's only if you're contributing. Mm-hmm. And contributing the way we think contributing is, right?
And who gets to define contributing? Exactly. But sorry, go ahead.
No, I think it's just the objectification of our people. We're just
labor.
That's it. We're not, there's nothing more beyond our stories than, what are you here to do for me? Mm-hmm. And that's mm-hmm. like the introduction, the welcome that we get yeah. when we come into this country. What are you here to do for us, for America, for Americans? And if you don't mm-hmm. fit that stereotype, you're othered and you're cornered. And I think going back to what you said about the shift that you both were talking about, that while we don't see it in movies of the chola or the criminal, you know, one, I think in addition to what you mentioned, I think it's also the fact that as a nation, we're reckoning with the criminal justice system. Yes. And understanding the bias and the injustice that is rooted in the just criminal justice system. And so I think we we're there, and there's still a lot more layers there that we are uncovering, but I think that contributes to the piece of not seeing in movies the criminality of people of color anymore, because it's not sexy, it's not okay to do that anymore.
You'll get canceled
quick.
So I mean, yes, right, get canceled.
right But I think what you talked about is the news outlet. Mm-hmm. Yes. They are the main culprits of perpetuating the criminality 100%. Of our people, because they don't shed light on the other aspects of our identities or the contributions that if it is based on contributions, let's do the whole picture. Mm-hmm. You know, what are we contributing to? Mm-hmm. You know, I'm thinking of Primer Impacto. That's, I hate them. Can I? I hate, and if you're watching, I hate you.
Univision and Telemundo.
Terrible.
We have a lot of issues with you.
Literally. The whole hour, the whole 60 minutes of Primer Impacto is literally news that I have impact, negative impact. Yeah. Someone died. Someone fell off a thing. A murder. A suicide.
How is it in Spanish? Is amarillismo.
Sí. Es, yeah. Tiene que ser algo.
Wait, what does that
impactante?
Mean?
Is the idea of, like, blood cells. Like amarillismo. Like, you know, it's like a yellow note. Is like with blood and murder and like, I feel like Univision and Telemundo, yeah. That's their whole business model.
And that's what they sell. And that's also what we consume. I mean, yeah. Let's also talk about that.
We believe, you know, our own narrative.
Yeah.
It's terrible.
So, you know, one of the things actually that I've been trying to understand, and I need to do my own research because I'm not seeing information, is that the whole migration crisis at the border. I've heard, and again, I cannot confirm, this is something that I'm going to put in my parking lot to understand, yeah. That compared to the 90s, for example, or the 80s, the migration numbers are nowhere near that. We, yes, it's a lot, and there's caravanas, and, you know, actually, there's a lot of immigrants. Like, I think I saw in the news, like, Chinese people from China were crossing the Mexico border, Haitians. So it's much more diverse, and they're not saying that. It's always, like, the Mexicans and the Central Americans. And then, two... Yeah. Everything's relative. Yes, it's a crisis, but let's look at over the last 50 years. How does that compare? And how do we address the problem having the full picture and the full context of the issue? Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things that I learned in public policy school is that you can't solve a problem until you define the problem.
Yes.
And we as a nation have not done that. If we're talking about immigration, we haven't defined that. It's always what's in the moment. What do we hear from the Republicans? Who's running for president? What crisis? How is it being portrayed by Spanish media and also all media.
Yeah. And also, let's be clear that it is a crisis because we've made it into a crisis.
Absolutely.
Yes.
It would not be a crisis. It would not be a crisis if we had open borders, if we had actual policies, good policy that would help people. And also the number of interventions, you know, the states has intervened in other countries. And that's why you have people who had, you know, dictators and all. Let's like, we can go on and on and on about the reasons why people are coming here. Trust me, no one wants to just leave their home, just to leave their home.
Right. People, it's don't like people would by want choice. This is not a exactly. vacation. People, it's would a terrible want, journey that nobody wants.
Yes.
And anybody would avoid it.
And people could. Would want to stay there if they had the opportunity to actually be successful or like have a thriving, whether it's a business or whatever, just a work. And they would say, they wouldn't come, they wouldn't have to, like Itzel said, have to endure so much pain to be able to, and then leave your family, all of that.
Right. And sometimes never see them again.
Yes. All these things that people don't see. It's like, it's not like, oh yeah, I'm just going to cross the border real quick.
Right.
And then that's that. It's like, no, it's like, there's things that we have perpetuated as a country, as a nation, that have affected a lot of these countries. And unfortunately, it's countries that have been previously colonized.
The Spanish media is a huge part of the problem. I don't know who are the executives there, but I would be curious to understand who's approving this information. Whose idea is it? We should talk about guts and murders and like whose
idea? Sells.
Yeah,
it
but,
sells.
But it, they have a responsibility, and 100%. They need to own that. And until they do their part, we are contributing to that. We're giving them, you know, we're giving the Republicans bait because our own media outlets are not doing justice to our stories.
Yeah. You know, one thing that I thought it was fascinating, when I was in undergrad, I did an analysis on Telemundo and Fox News. And what the analysis was looking at, they were essentially using the same B-roll to tell an entirely different story. And I thought, you know, I mean, from a communications perspective, I thought it was fascinating, right? Because it's like, wow, like the image is there. Like a video, you will think, right? A video doesn't lie. And yet, the ability to change the narrative and come in with an agenda was so real and so palpable. But just because the you know, Telemundo is a Spanish speaking media, it didn't necessarily meant that they were saying a positive story.
Right.
You know? And it was really overwhelming. I think for me to see, it's like, wow, there is, like, the narrative could be subjective. And like, what is the danger behind that? You know?
I have a very complicated relationship with the media. Especially when I enter the police commission work and all those dynamics there. On one hand, you know, the fact that we have free speech and anybody can say anything, that's a wonderful thing.
Without consequences or being fact-checked, which can
that's
be very dangerous.
I mean, I don't know if we ever really recognize how lucky we are to live in a country that allows for people to express themselves and how they, whether you agree or not, everyone should have a right. But I think that when we focus on the media and their focus is just on clickbait and it's just to stir the pot, and because even the nature of the way stories work, the way I've seen it is you get a call from a reporter, hey, I have a deadline at 3:00 today. Are you available? Okay, let's say you make that work. You give them, you know, 2 minutes worth, maybe five if you're lucky. And they spend this whole story that they had less than 10 hours to come. So they miss so much. And I think it's an injustice when you throw something out there without the full color, without the full picture, and you call that news and you call that media, objective media. No, it's not objective. So it's challenging for me. I think, you know, it should be focused on journalism. It should be focused on giving the stories the time that they require to tell the full story and not just focusing on what's hot.
Yeah.
And just, you know, because it just, yeah. Here in Oakland, and you probably know better than me, when you just throw nasty stuff, it gets a reaction, and then it kind of builds a pot of shit that it's really difficult to step back from, because now egos are involved, and then you said this in the media, so I'm gonna say that, and then that feeds all of that. Mm-hmm. Instead of just focusing on what are we trying to do and giving as much color as you can, you know?
Yeah, I think on that note, on, you know, specifically media coming from news outlets, you know, like, I'm coming from a public relations background, right? And for me, I would always tell, you know, the people that I work with, you know, everybody has bias, and that does not exclude journalists. And, you know, for the past 10, 12 years that I've been doing, like, PR and communications, it was really interesting to see that majority of journalists that work writing a story already had an angle, or already had, like, a point of view that they were trying to prove. And I think that the one that was the most interesting that is relevant to this conversation, there was a journalist from Telemundo, ironically. We're really pounding on them, but they're giving us a lot of material. but, you know, it was a reporter from Telemundo who was doing a story after Trump won the election, and how that was pushing immigrants who filed their taxes with ITIN numbers to not file and not pay taxes. Mm. And I remember at the time, the organization that I work with had a program for free, you know, where they will file people's taxes for free. And I remember talking to the person that coordinated the program. I was like, hey, like, is this true? Mm. Like, is the data saying that this story is true? And she was like, no, we've never had so many clients. Like, we have a wait list. Like, mm-hmm. And, you know, 90% of the people that file with us do it with an ITIN number. Mm-hmm. So I was like, okay. So I immediately, like, brought this report and was like, you're wrong, right? Like, your story is wrong. And the questions that she was asking, like, she was really pushing, like, trying to get her narrative. And, you know, we work there at the same time, so I'm sure you know what I'm talking about. But it was just really fascinating to me, like, the effort to try to push this story when the story wasn't there.
Right.
And, you know, it ended up being an entirely different story, because I was like, I could show you the numbers, I could show you the data, and the people that we brought in for her to interview. You know, community members were like, no, we're not, you know, we're not scared. If anything, we want to show that we are paying, and, like, we're part of this community, and we care for their well-being. And I thought it was beautiful to unfold, and, like, you know, I feel like that reporter's soul was breaking little by little, because it was just like, the story you want to say is not there. But yeah, I think media has a long way to go when it comes to not being complicit.
Yeah.
I feel like that's, I do feel like they are complicit in perpetuating stereotypes in general, and especially anything that criminalizes our community.
I think you were going to say something.
No, I think it's just, I'm trying to remember what I was going to say, but I was just like, I'm thinking about, there's great that we have freedom of speech and all of that, and yeah, we're very lucky, we're privileged, but then there's a thin line between what you say and also what's facts, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a difference between how you feel and, like, whether that's reality or not,
right?
You know, like, and sometimes we fall into the, well, I feel this is wrong because I feel this is wrong, then it's wrong, when in reality it might not be wrong. The fact is that it's probably a good thing, or it's probably nothing there. And so I think that's the other thing, is, like, sometimes we fall into the category of, like, oh, because I think or I believe this is fact, it is fact for me, when that probably is not the reality, or
my reality is the reality.
Exactly. And that also, there's only one answer to things. I think that's the other thing, right? And which, that's why you see, you know, very extreme sometimes ways of like thinking or seeing or how we think or portrayed in the media. It's just like it's either this that's really negative or this that's like very positive kind of thing. And it's because, again, there's an agenda already in place, yeah, how things are supposed to be put out there.
Yeah. This binary thinking keeps on popping up.
Mm-hmm.
Like every conversation we're having, this idea of either or, black and white, yes or no, and not having the flexibility or opening to the idea of the in-between.
Mm-hmm.
Of the, hey, this might not fit. Doesn't mean that it's good. Doesn't mean that it's bad.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like it's such an awkward place to be, and it comes with uncertainty. And I feel like that's why people are so uncomfortable with it.
We're being conditioned to accept and like to live in binary and black and what's hot, what's not, who's next, you know. I think because that's the way the media has been for, I mean, I don't know, for decades, centuries. That's how we're conditioned. And I think as a human race, as Americans, as people, like, we all need to build that capacity to hold complexity. And, you know, back to what you were saying, Mayra, the phrase that came up for me is, with free speech comes responsibility.
Yeah.
Responsibility to be informed in what you say and understand the impact of what you're saying. You know, words matter. That's one of the things that I think I've come to understand as I've gotten older, as I've, you know, risen in the workforce, is that words matter. And you always have to be mindful of what you're saying to understand unintended consequences and that self-awareness. So yeah, the media has a responsibility. And when I was thinking of that, I'm like, who are the executives? Who are the owners of Univision and Telemundo? I want to know what they believe.
I will send you a link. It's a bunch of white men.
Of course it is. And they're probably Republican and probably have stakes in Fox and in other companies, right? Yeah. So,
well, it's all a spider web.
Yeah.
When you look at the umbrella of
right.
who owns what, like they're all connected. And that's
right.
why you see the same B-roll
right.
being used in multiple outlets
yeah.
because they're all part of the same family. But I think on that note of words matter, I think that's a good place to stay and like remind people the words you use do have an impact,
mm-hmm.
especially if you're associating those words with images, with people, and with narratives. I do. You know, and I'm biased. I'm a comms person, so to me, it's like I can get very needy and gritty about words and language. But that's the power of it, right? Like, language is culture. Culture is power. And we just need to be really aware of
mm-hmm.
how it is that we're talking, not just about ourselves, but about each other.
Mm-hmm.
On that note, what word you each want to leave us? After this conversation,
I have a phrase, and that's free speech comes with responsibility. Period.
That's right.
That's
period
deep.
At the end.
Period.
Do you want to go first, Itzel? I'm still trying to
understand.
Processing. I'm still processing.
I know we went to a lot of places.
Oh, yeah.
With this conversation. I think for me is my word is resistance. Because I purposely don't watch the news. I feel like I watch the news when I have to as part of my job.
Yeah.
But I resist to watch them a lot because the negativity is very real and is very overwhelming. And I think it's so easy to go down a spiral of the world is always on fire because, you know, for every 20 bad stories, you hear one good one.
Right.
And I feel for me, you know, we all live in Oakland and I feel like Oakland is one of the cities that is always on the news. There's always something bad happening. It's always something on fire. But then at the same time, there's so many people that are innovative, that really
yeah.
care about the community, that, you know, from the nonprofit sector, from the private, that are really doing a lot to help people and really bring the town up. And those never get featured. Those never get on the front page. So I feel like for me, it's resistance.
And can I just put a pin on anybody who's listening or watching? Don't believe everything you read about Oakland.
Yes.
Because what's out in the media is not even half of what's true and what's happening in our city.
Yeah. Kareli took the words exactly what I was going to say, just probably a little bit differently. Like, that might be true. What you see is all these things that are bad happening in Oakland, but that is not the reality. This city was, became what it is because of people like the Black Panther Party, because of people who were like, we're not going to deal with like the inequities that are happening to the Black community. And then it just like, it's a very advocacy kind of city that is also will call you out for like the real things.
But it has
also,
grit. Of course,
it has character, it has personality, yes. It has culture. And also it's like, there's people here and like people who have families and people who continue and want to stay here and want to make Oakland a thriving and beautiful city for the people that are here, you know? And then I guess my word is like empathy. It's like we need to have empathy when it comes to like just like people in general, people's realities, people's just cultures. And like we need to be more empathetic to just things that are happening, but also like being like actually take action.
Well, thank you both. And, you know, if you're watching or listening, it's very obvious that we're biased, that we love our town. We love Oakland. So if you've never been, highly recommend to visit. And if you live here, make sure you advocate for what your community needs, either at the city, county level. There is always a way to use your voice in a productive way. So with that, we'll leave you there.